Hi, and welcome to Last Man Standing here with me, Paul Stevenson. You're live here with me on Republic Broadcasting Network, republicbroadcasting.org. Of course, do support us. If you go to the homepage, you will find the various donations that are available. That is the easiest and the best way to do that. And there are various different options. You can post in, you can send money electronically. But as I say, if you go to the homepage, you'll see all the various options. And I'm going to be joined with Patrick Slattery tonight. I haven't spoken to Patrick in maybe, I don't know, 2 or 3 weeks. I've been in and out of the country. And delighted to be to have you with me here, Patrick.
Well, thank you for having me, Paul.
Very welcome. And I wondered what is pressing on your mind. What is do you think is the most important thing? I've got a few little topics here that I could run past you and see if you want to talk about any of these, or do you have anything that you'd like to talk about, which is.
All right. So you've got some things. That's probably what we'll talk about. If you're just asking me what's on my mind, how about the end of civilization?
Oh, OK. Well, that's interesting.
We'll get to it. We'll get to it.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll get to not just talking about it, but we'll actually get to the end of civilization.
OK.
Maybe.
OK, great. Yeah, great. all right. Let's start with these balloons that everyone seems to be talking about or have been talking about. I mean, from where I'm standing, it seems like a lot of hot air.
I initially thought it was hot air. Apparently, it's helium. I think it's helium. People might think that I've got a lot of helium because if you've been listening to my shows for the past week, I had Punxsutawney Phil, a groundhog, and that might sound like me after I've inhaled helium, but actually it's not. It's really a rodent, and he's talking to you.
Yeah. So what's your views on all that? I mean, it seems like a bit of a distraction, or what other angles could you present on this whole balloon saga or balloons?
Balloonacy. The balloonacy, as Michael Barrow called it. Yeah, the balloonacy. I was calling it Bloomageddon. But yeah, so I mean, I've seen Tucker Carlson for the past couple of weeks. He keeps talking about Chinese military aircraft violating our airspace. And Joseph Biden's not doing anything. Beijing Joe's not doing anything about it.
Yeah, I know.
I want to go on record that I am 100% pro-balloon. I stand with the balloons. I stand with the chinks. I stand with the chinks in their damn balloons. Tucker Carlson's a fag, and Mr. Rogers, Mr. Rogers would totally kick his ass in a cage match. That's what I say. I say all of those things. I am pro balloon. I don't even care if it's a spy balloon. I would assume it's just a weather balloon. I don't see what's the point of a spy balloon when you've got the Chinese have hundreds of satellites up there. Many of them are spy satellites. We've got thousands of satellites. Many of them are spy satellites. We've got spies in each other's countries. We've got diplomats. We've got all sorts of stuff going on. And even if there was some sort of spy function on one of these balloons, it would be such a drop in the bucket. It would just be a tiny bit of static amidst all of this noise. Why get your knickers in a bunch over this? So I stand with the balloons.
Yeah, I feel a little bit embarrassed for Tucker Carlson, to be honest, because, okay, he's China obsessed, but he's obviously not considered. And you would like to think that someone in his position with the influence he has and the team around him that he has, that someone might save him that potential embarrassment by pointing out to him some of the things that you've just said. I think it's something like maybe 300 satellites or something the Chinese have. The Russians apparently have got more. You'd also have to question, I mean, what kind, what kind of a 21st century surveillance and intelligence gathering mechanism is a balloon randomly floating through the air? I mean, it's basically dependent on the air currents. I mean, this doesn't seem the most targeted way of gathering intelligence. And also, I find the same thing here. Over here, we've had talks about balloons. I forget, was it because there was a balloon over Ukraine, or today Rishi Sunak was talking about, we take this, you know, our national security very seriously. So they're worried about balloons. But our borders, like your borders in the southern border, is wide open. We don't know who's coming into the country. How many Chinese, how many potential Russians are coming into the country? Did the United States think about this or care about that? Does Tucker Carlson, has that maybe dawned on him that how many people are coming in? Do you know where they are? Do you know where they're working? Same in this country. So there's this obsession of these balloons and national security, but our borders are wide open and we don't know who the hell's coming into the country. That's in addition to the satellites that you just mentioned. So it is pathetic. Well, what's interesting, though, is the angle. There's always an angle. And what do you think is behind it with this? Is it just, I mean, some have speculated it's just a mere distraction from the Nord Stream pipeline scandal, which we'll get to. Or is it something else? I mean, it seems that one of the spokespersons for the White House has just, you know, after all this drama, has just come out and just dismissed the whole thing, you know? What's his name? Not the black lesbian,
not,
the other.
Not client. The black lesbian immigrant, but the guy, he was a Navy admiral. What's his name? I know who you're talking about. He was an admiral in the Navy. I can't remember his name.
Dickhead.
Yeah, Dickhead. Dickhead. But yeah, most people know who we're talking about, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Well, so regarding whether this is a distraction, it's like, okay, well, what's it a distraction from? And on the short term, you could say, well, if you have something in the news cycle, they'll often want to put something else on to squeeze something else out of the news. So the Nord Stream pipeline, you had Seymour Hersh, a very accomplished Jewish journalist who is, done a lot of very good work over his career, starting in the late 60s.
Didn't realize he was Jewish. The irony.
He is Jewish, but he's done a lot of really good work. Good work exposing the, Israeli nuclear doctrine and all sorts of stuff. So I'm not going to complain about Seymour Hersh, but at any rate, he had disclosed information that confirming, big surprise, it was the Americans who were behind blowing up the pipeline. And the thing that's really shocking is nobody predicted this, right? And so you've got that. By the way, you're Irish, or part Irish. I'm part Irish. You know what limericks are, right?
Yes.
They're kind of Irish, aren't they?
Yeah, they're like little rhymes, little sort of poems almost, except that they're kind of... Yeah.
All right, see if you can appreciate this one. Because, Seymour Hersh said it was the American military with some Norwegian involvement, but the American military, which is led by Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin. So in honor of Lloyd Austin, I wrote this poem, and here it is. There was a big ape named Lloyd Austin who fought wars for the Jews, but he lost them. So to save the Jews' ass, he blew up Russia's gas. Now he brags, Putin can't Holocaust them.
Very good, Patrick. That was an inspired moment.
It was very inspired. Inspired. So is it a distraction from that? Did it push it out of the news cycle? Well, the balloons push a lot of stuff out of the news cycle, so you could say that. But also, you can look at it from a different level. That the whole China stuff, this is part of the China stuff, right? That the whole China stuff is a distraction from what? It's a distraction from Jewish power. There's all this stuff going on. Civilization really is collapsing in front of our eyes. Our countries are being completely lost before our eyes. It's Jewish power that's doing it. But, you know, we have to be too polite. We're too polite to talk about Jewish power because that might be anti-Semitic. So we can't talk about Jewish power. But, you know, they kindly come up with these alternative explanations that we can talk about in mixed company, in polite company. So we can talk about the slanty-eyed chinks and their damn balloons. We can talk about that. That's not, you know, that's fine. But to talk about Jewish power, no. So, like, all these problems we have, all these, you know, you're talking about the border being wide open. It wasn't the Chinese. There are some Chinese who are coming over the border, although when you consider that the Chinese at 1.4 billion people, they constitute like about 18% of the world's population. Like one out of six people in the world is a Chinaman. Another one out of six people in the world is an Indian. But I tell you one thing, one out of six people coming over the illegally coming over the southern border aren't Chinese. I mean, they are mostly from in America, they're mostly from Latin American countries, but increasingly just from random countries. They're from Nepal. They're from Burma. They are from Uzbekistan. They are from wherever. They're from Nigeria. They're just coming. It's completely random now. And the least of my worries is that because honestly, there are Chinese coming to the United States in fairly large numbers, but they don't have to come illegally. They come legally. And that's a whole nother problem. We've got not just a problem with illegal immigrants flooding over the southern border. We've got a problem with legal immigrants who are coming into our airports and passing through immigration. We've got a ton of those.
Yeah, yep. So do we. Net migration figures recently for last year was to this country was 500,000. This is a disaster. 500,000 is not a small amount to people. You now got Manchester, Birmingham, and London, where you know the native population are a minority now. I have to say, I can't see how this to me is irrevocable. It's very, very disheartening. It's very depressing. I don't see how it can be. We spoke before about this is a knot that is very difficult to untangle. I'm not sure how this can be addressed without, serious measures. And not only are serious measures not currently being taken to reverse it, but they just keep coming. So what can you do? I mean, I don't know. When I go to Italy, there's a stark difference in the demographics, certainly in North Italy, where I go. And then you come back into Londonistan, and it hits you straight at the airport. It's just brown people everywhere. It's like you've landed in a different airport. And it is depressing. But, I just don't know what the solution to this is, because it just gets worse and worse and worse. But as you say, I mean, we've got all the dinghies, and we've got, they're coming over and, you know, I think, 50,000-60,000 a year, or somewhere around that, but you get 500,000 of, you know, so-called legal immigrants. So, like I said, it's a disaster.
It is a disaster, and the metaphor I've been using lately is our houses are on fire. They're on fire, and when the house is on fire, really you got to focus on putting out the fire. Then once the fire's out, there's going to be, you got to assess the damage. What can be rebuilt? What can be repaired? What has to be torn down? Who knows? But the fire is aging. You got to concentrate on putting out the fire, rather than arguing or wasting a lot of time on planning for, you know, the architecture after the fire. We got to just put out the fire, assess the damage. Especially, I'm old, I'm a boomer. So especially me, because I did listen to Nick Fuentes last night, and I like Nick Fuentes. He's 24. And if you're 24, you do have a very different perspective, because, presumably, you know, once, if we do succeed in putting out the fire within, say, the next decade, you still got a lot of time in front of you. So maybe for somebody that young, maybe to think about what happens afterwards is natural. But for me, I just got to concentrate on trying to put out the fire. And the only fire extinguisher that I, as far as I'm concerned, the only fire extinguisher is talking about Jewish power. If people can talk about Jewish power, it actually becomes pretty obvious. If we can talk about it, it's pretty obvious. I mean, you look at the United States and you look at the six out of the seven most important cabinet officers, you know, there's a lot of things you can point to. Okay, there really is Jewish power, but is it nefarious? Well, yeah, there's an awful lot you can point to. There's a lot of evidence that we wouldn't be having these wars, for instance, without the Jewish power at the State Department and in the press. We wouldn't have had the whole coronavirus lockdowns without Jewish power. We wouldn't have had, well, the mass immigrations and the Black Lives Matter riots. We wouldn't be having the anti-whiteism without Jewish power. And these are things that really can be documented and exposed pretty easily as long as we can talk about them. But right now we can't talk about them.
But, you know,
so that's where we're at.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast by, you know, Douglas McGregor, who I like listening to. He's very knowledgeable about a lot of things. And actually, you know, he doesn't take this anti-German, anti-Hitler view. I think he spent time in Germany with an ex-German military guy from the Wehrmacht at the time. He's pretty old. He's 70. He's not that old, but, you know, and he said, I didn't judge them as some evil Nazi and everything else. And he learned a lot from him militarily and other things. And he also spoke to people who were still alive at the time, who spoke about that when Hitler's Germany came into Ukraine, for example, that they brought order, they gave them their property back, and they fed them. And he compared this with Stalin, who stole their property, starved them, and, you know, shot them in the back of the head. So, you know, he says some objective and more positive things that would probably raise eyebrows for most people, because it's you know, to say anything good about the most evil man that ever lived, of course, in Adolf Hitler, is such a cliche, devoid of any nuance or context. Like we said before, he's been resigned to that sort of, you know, label forever, I suppose. But he then talks about Jewish figures. Like, for example, a guy called Colin Muskie, who he reckons is responsible for putting Zelensky in there. Mm-hmm. And of course, George Soros comes up, and he's aware of the Jewish role in Bolshevism. And at times...
Are you talking about Douglas McGregor still? Who are you talking about?
Yeah, Douglas McGregor. But so it's like if he, you know, he's very close to, you know, acknowledging that, listen, there's a problem with Jewish power here, because you're naming quite a few Jews and you're naming things that are true, but yet you stop short of saying there's a Jewish problem. And I just think it's not, maybe it's his age, but he seems incapable of even entertaining the idea. So he has to go around the houses, and he's actually scratching his head as to how a Jew can put Zelensky in there, because Zelensky's Jewish, and then they've got the Azov battalion in there, who are Nazis, mm-hmm. and stuff like that, or claim to be neo-Nazis. So he, you know, he doesn't understand, and a lot of people don't understand why this war is going on. And if you don't understand the Jewish thing, this thing makes no sense to you.
No, the only way it can make sense to you is if you start saying it's the Chi-Coms, it's the Chinese, you know, their balloons are spying on us, they've got columns and columns of military people coming over the border secretly disguised as Amerindians, you know, or there's other ways. I mean, you can make sense of it with Noam Chomsky, that it's the military industrial complex and its corporate power. But of course, and you start looking at the corporate power, the media power, and actually you find, well, they're Jews, you know, they're Jews, not everybody, but the, critical mass of them are Jews. And these things, the Jews might not be sufficient to make all of this stuff happen, but they are necessary. Without the Jews and without Jewish power, this stuff wouldn't be happening. We wouldn't necessarily have all our problems solved. And it's not just the Jews, but the Jews, without the Jews, we would not be having these massive problems that we've been talking about.
Yeah, I find it particularly frustrating because historically, and particularly in Christianity, which is essentially doesn't really exist anymore in the West, this clique, this problem has been well known. When Jews first came into the United States, there was an attitude of unequivocal circumspection as their reputations preceded them. And they were prevented from engaging in certain activities like, you know, businesses and other activities. But they overcame that. And, you know, the HQ is basically the United States, which, again, which is why I believe that, you know, there's so much aggression. And, of course, we've got people like Boris Johnson here, who's part Jewish, but also he's just a complete puppet as well. But his aggression towards the United States, or towards Russia, has been incredible as well. And then you've got all the other people who've just have their mouths and their pockets full of money and do what they're told for their own ambitions. And then, of course, I think Liz Truss probably fell into the category of, like we spoke about before, as just an ignorant moron. And they probably thought it's best to remove her just in case someone red pills her. And then we've got a problem. We know we can rely on Rishi because he's an ambitious little 5'4" Indian.
Is he 5'4"?
Listen, these guys are tiny. It's very interesting. I mean, Zelensky's probably about 5'5", 5'6", or something like that. And Sunak's the same. I find it interesting that a lot of these psychos are very, very short. And that's
Macron's
no offense.
Pretty short.
He's another one. Anyway, I think, okay, these people have got so used to running the show. They're full of hubris. I think they've bitten off more than they can chew with Russia. I think that's pretty evident. Jens Stoltenberg basically announced recently and revealed and admitted that Ukrainians are using more ammunition than the West can produce. Okay, so they're running out of ammunition fast, whereas Russia, in response to this additional NATO aggression, has got their own military industrial complex working round the clock 24/7, I believe. So, you know, they've been humbled a bit that way, and I think they're concerned. But this Nord Stream pipeline, I mean, this really is an example of a group of people thinking they can do whatever they want with impunity, because they announced it, both Victoria Nuland and Biden announced that if Russia invaded Ukraine, that they would destroy the Nord Stream pipeline. Lo and behold, the Nord Stream pipeline gets blown up. Anybody who knows anything is remotely informed knows it was the United States, possibly with the cooperation of the United Kingdom. Now they deny it completely. In response to this, Russia has called for a meeting with the United Nations. And they said, we are not going to allow this to be brushed under the rug. And they should not, because I think that they've overstepped the mark here. This is not only an act of war, but it can be. It's certainly in the current climate, when you look at what they're always talking about, Iran and anybody else, this is an act of international terrorism. It's also completely against the Constitution. And it gets more complex because it's actually an attack on an ally. And the media is obviously avoiding it, but Russia are saying that they're not going to allow this to be brushed under the carpet. So I find this very interesting because you can argue, of course, that nothing will happen. Nothing ever happens. But do you think this is going to be a significant moment or a turning point in exposing this cabal, this criminal syndicate, for what they really are?
Yeah, I think it really could be. I might sound super pessimistic when I say, you know, we're on the brink of the end of civilization, because we kind of are. But on the other hand,
our civilization,
well, Western civilization, Christian civilization, I mean, those are virtually synonymous, right? Western civilization for the past 1800 years is synonymous with Christian civilization. And we're on the verge of losing that. You know, we could maintain some sort of Oriental civilization that has a lot of Western influence, and the Orientals would continue to play Bach and Mozart. They're very good at that, actually. They'd even play Dixieland jazz. They're good at that too. But it really wouldn't be Western civilization without white Christians. But the thing is, I have never been someone, I really push back against this, that there is some Jewish master plan. I think there's Jewish power, and I think Jews work out consensuses in real time. I don't think there is some Jewish master plan. I mean, really, think about it. If there's some Jewish master plan that goes back 2,000 years, really, would you say, oh, you know, because people have 70, 80 year lifespans, would you really say, okay, 100 generations in the future, we're going to be doing this and that? Like, no, if you've got so much power, do it now. The idea that there was some sort of master Jewish plan, but there has been this, Jews and European Christians have been struggling for many, many centuries. You can go back. You could go back 2,000 years or more. There, it's been going on, and it's still not resolved. It doesn't mean that they actually had a plan that was 2,100 years long, and we're about to reach the culmination. That doesn't make any sense. Jews. The thing is, if there was like really a centralized Jewish planning structure, they would learn from their mistakes, because they've made plenty of mistakes and they keep repeating the mistakes, and they overplay their hands, as you just identified. I think they really have overplayed their hands. I think they're like really on the verge of being exposed. Doesn't necessarily mean they will be exposed, but I think that's why there was such a big freak out about Kanye West. They're on the verge of being exposed. And they've overplayed their hands before. I'm not saying that the Holocaust was Adolf Hitler's master plan to gas 6 million Jews in order to get the gold from their fillings or whatever. But there were an awful lot of Jews who died in the 1940s. Was that part of a master plan, or was that them overplaying their hands? And then they were back on their heels and they wound up recovering. I think they've overplayed their hand right now. They might really suffer a massive setback. It could happen. I don't believe in the big plan. Last thing I'll say is the great leader, Marshal Kim Il-sung of North Korea, said the people are the masters of their own destiny. And it's so true. It's so true.
Yeah. I mean, I've been saying it for years that, yeah, there's nothing new in this. This cycle's been going on for centuries, and that they're a mad dog, and that they never know when to stop. And that's their undoing. They, you know, they're so aggressive, it outweighs even their own kind of street level, you know, pernicious sagacity and their sneakiness. And then they eventually raise eyebrows, and they eventually cause people to be so miserable that people stop being so polite that you alluded to earlier. When it gets bad enough, when you're hungry or when your children are hungry or when you're freezing, people start asking who's doing this, who's making the commands here, why are these politicians doing this, who are they working for? And then, you know, eventually you'll have a reaction to it, and there'll be pushback on it. There'll probably be a lot of hostility towards Jews. Some innocent Jews will probably get thrown under the bus with it. This will end up going down as another chapter in the synagogue as anti-Semitism, where they take zero responsibility for their own behavior. And they're angrier than ever for the next time. I just think it's just a cycle. I just think it's a matter of time, but I think they've had their own way for a century now. But they've had unprecedented power. Henry Ford warned about it early on. And so they've caused a lot of anxiety and a lot of indoctrination for people to be able to talk about them because of the Holocaust, particularly, I suppose. And they've infiltrated the church with Christian Zionism, and the fact that the church is so diluted, is so biblically illiterate, it's so ignorant of its history that it doesn't seem to understand these things. So, you know, they've had their own way for a long time, and I think this time it's going to be, you know, it's taken longer for people to talk about it. Like, we're talking about it, and lots of people are probably talking about it but are too scared to talk about it. And you can understand, these people are vicious. They're ruthless. You've only got one life. Do you want to spend it in prison or whatever, or killed? But I think people will come around to talking about it. Now, there's a guy called Gonzalo Lira. I think he's a journalist. He said in a quote, "It's a trap for the West," and pertaining to this Nord Stream pipeline. Now, the reason this interests me is because I think, you know, okay, Biden's not a Jew, but I think if this is explored, there's enough Jews involved with it where it's going to cause a problem. And anyway, whether he's a Jew or not, he's a scumbag. and I'm sick of these people and their hubris. But this guy says it's a trap for the West. If they agree to the UN Security Council meeting, then the United States will be shown to be responsible for the Nord Stream terrorist attack. If they refuse, it will discredit the United Nations and show it to be a Western war justification engine. Now, I don't share this guy's unequivocal optimism, but there's obviously something to what he says. Now, this depends on whether this criminal syndicate is truly above the law, where this can be ignored, or whether this, in the current shifts that we've seen geopolitically, where people are sick and tired of the U.S. Hegemony, you've seen Russia, you know, strengthening its relationships with China and India particularly, and even Saudi Arabia are sick of the West because, you know, just on the petrodollar alone. So this might, even apart from the war, which they're losing, despite Milley's affirmations that pathetically, in short, Russia has lost, he said last night, I think, or the night before.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, apart from the war itself, which eventually the truth is going out when Zelensky's no longer on television and Ukraine no longer ceases, you know, actually doesn't exist anymore, it's going to be hard to keep the propaganda going. But I am very interested in how this plays out, because even if they refuse Russia's, like he says, you know, desire to have this in front of the United Nations, it'll cause some sort of discredit to the United Nations. Now, we know it's just a tool of, you know, U.S. or Jewish power. But I'm so cynical that I could see them all just walking scot-free from this as well, because this is ostensibly a criminal act internationally and against the Constitution of the United States. It's so obvious that there needs to be some sort of accountability for this. And I hope Russia does hold their feet to the fire for this and keep pushing it and don't allow it to be brushed under the rug, you know, because I think Russia have called the bluff of the West, because if McGregor's anything to go by and now Stoltenberg's admitting it, we don't even, United States with all their NATO allies, I don't think we've got any weapons, Patrick. We've given them all to the Ukraine. What are Russia have got nothing to be scared of.
They don't have any. I mean, yeah, what is there to be scared of? It's, they did overplay their hands. When I say they, I'm talking about, you know, Nate, it's all under your kind of Jewish power, but you've got all these organizations, these institutions, NATO, the American government, you know, the media. You've got all these institutions. And they have overplayed their hand. You know, the media has been going on and on and on about how hard Russia is losing. And Mark Milley, I mean, really? You're going to go out and say that they've already lost?
Not effectively. He gave a big statement about how Russia's this and that, and they've overstretched themselves, and they've proven themselves to be this, that, and the other, and weak, and we see the continued resilience of the Ukrainian people, and some BS. And then he said, quote, in short, Russia has lost. I mean, that's a pretty bold statement. As you watch Russia just up in the ante, and I think they've already begun that offensive, it's just a complete and utter unrelenting onslaught of precision guided missiles of all descriptions and artillery fire. It's just an incessant onslaught. Which, so how you can make that statement? I suppose it's just desperation. So if you're losing the actual war, you have to up the ante on the propaganda and the psychological warfare, I suppose. Sorry to interrupt you.
Oh no, that's fine. The thing is, they're. How can that not be exposed in the due course of time? How can it not be exposed if you actually have the Ukrainian government fleeing, or Zelensky being overthrown, or surrendering? You've had the Black Lives Matter stuff where they were saying that this was peaceful protest, which is such nonsense. And but, you know, they're still out there saying that whites are always doing racism at blacks. And you know, they still do this. The coronavirus, you've got all these people who are invested in the coronavirus, who wore the masks and took the shots. They don't want to admit they're wrong. But something like this, where they're saying that we're winning a war and Russia's losing a war. And then, I mean, I don't know if you can, how you can just maintain that kind of fiction. Maintaining the fiction about like black victimhood or something, that's one thing. Maintaining a victim, maintaining this hoax about, well, these people who are dying, well, they're not dying from the virus. Yeah, well, okay, it's hard to, in any given circumstance, it's hard to say exactly what the cause of death for a given individual was, and most people aren't going to look at overall statistics.
Yeah, they can muddy the waters, and they can rely on a certain ambiguity there to wing it.
Yeah.
But
to have the Russian army, march into, I don't know if they're going to march into Kiev, but they're going to march where they want to go.
Well, I think unless Zelensky and, you know, of course he's a puppet, of course, but unless the West agree with Putin's terms in a peace deal, then Russia's going to have to go into Ukraine and actually remove Zelensky and that whole regime by force, because he can't allow them to stay there. That's just a little sort of tiny little bit of cancer that would be left to grow, and they'd be a constant pain in the backside for the Russians. They have to get rid of that. They have to kill all that cancer and get rid of any, you know, threat to the Russian Federation and the Ukraine, which is their goal now because no one's listening. But, you know, this guy Zelensky, like you said, I don't know how they're going to keep this facade going. Like, you know, like you said, with coronavirus, you can say, well, it's this, it's that, it's not the vaccine that's killing people left, right, and center suddenly. In fact, I watched a video last night because I try not to think about this too much, but I watched, because I know too many people with vaccines, but I watched this guy, he does like these, I find them quite relaxing, these kind of wilderness shows where, you know, guys are out and camping and building this, that, and the other. And then he did a video, he was talking about his wife died. And the video was titled something like "Rest in Peace, My Lover" or something. So I switched it on out of curiosity, and he said, "Well, me and my beautiful wife and I went to bed on Saturday night, and only I woke up," and that terrifies me. But anyway, they can muddy the waters with that. But like you say, how are they going to do that? Meanwhile, Zelensky said, we won't compromise with Putin. Compromising is okay. People compromise all the time in life. Compromise is not bad in and of itself. But we won't compromise with Putin because he cannot be trusted. I mean, that's obviously ironic and so hypocritical. Consider how much compromising Putin might have been prepared to do, and how much the West have lied and had this duplicity when it comes to diplomacy. But there's this narrative in amongst all this that not only are Ukraine going to survive this Russian onslaught, but they're talking about constantly, and Zelensky today in a BBC interview talking about this spring counteroffensive where they're going to take back the Crimea. I think reality is actually dawning on Anthony Blinken, at least, because Anthony Blinken has come out and he has said that I think Crimea is a red line for Putin, and basically said that we want no part in that. And that if Ukraine want to attempt to take back the Crimea, they'll have to, I'm paraphrasing, but they'll have to do it pretty much on their own, which is a big statement for someone like Anthony Blinken. That's a departure from the narrative.
That is, does that represent rats jumping from the ship?
That represents, I think, fear. I think there's a desperation going on now. But someone like Blinken saying something like that, I think Russia's got their attention, to put it mildly. I think the fact that, you know, the United States were able to throw their weight around because they'd rely on the military. But, you know, I watched a video last night where somebody was comparing the promo video for the Russian military and the promo video for United States recruits. And so you have these hardcore young guys doing these like uber difficult drills and very serious stuff. And then you have the United States advertisement for recruitment, where some young girl was brought up with two lesbians. How she got involved with equality, and how she found herself and found some inner strength to join the military. I mean, so that's where we're at. And I think Blinken is aware that, you know, Russia's called her a bluff. Maybe he's just looking after himself.
You know? And here's the thing. Like I said, I don't believe in the plan, that there's a singular plan. I don't believe that Jewish power is some sort of centralized, top-down monolith. I don't see that. I see Jewish power as, there's a whole bunch of sources of Jewish power. There's a lot of individuals that they have processes where they come to more or less,
a consensus.
Consensus. Yeah, they build consensuses, which not all Jews come to the same consensus, but they get an effective consensus. And the thing is, if you're a Jew, if you're Tony Blinken or Victoria Nuland, or
is he a Jew?
They're also individuals. They're not kamikaze. They're
not kamikaze. Well?
Then, for the most part, they're not going to just throw themselves, into the cogs of the machine and die. They're not going to, for the most part, sacrifice their lives. And so somebody like Tony Blinken, yeah, he's loyal to his tribe, but he would also like to continue to have a career. And so things are falling apart. And so you're going to have somebody like Tony Blinken or whoever else. I mean, look at the role Jeffrey Sachs is playing. Now, Jeffrey Sachs played a very nefarious role, in my estimation. He certainly had massive negative impact on Russia in the 1990s. I'd say he's nefarious. Maybe some people would say, oh, well, he didn't plan on destroying Russia. It just happened. It just was a coincidence, Goy. Either way, he played a horrible role. But look at him now. He's playing him. He's kind of the voice of reason, which is strange. So it's not as if they're all a monolith. And I do think that things are falling apart for them, too. I mean, they depend on Western civilization. They
yeah.
depend on Christian civilization, even as they destroy it. I mean, the termites live in a house even as they eat it.
That's a good analogy. The Chinese, I don't think, would be so tolerant of them. But Blinken told a group of experts that the U.S. is not seeking to actively encourage Kiev to reclaim the peninsula. He said the U.S., this top diplomat said, the decision should be left up to Ukraine to decide alone. In other words, if you want to go in and try and take back Crimea, you're going to be doing it without us.
Well, there you go. Hey, how much more time do we have?
We've got about 10 minutes.
Okay. Just checking on the time.
Yeah.
Well,
let me just see what else we can glean from this article. It's in the Telegraph. And, of course, we've been so more anti-Russian than anybody. So they put when the U.S. The headline here, Antony Blinken is put in those pejorative quotes, warns Ukraine. This is obviously not liked by the Telegraph, but we shouldn't be surprised. The Daily Mail has been another disgraceful instrument of propaganda. In fact, this whole country has been a disgraceful example of propaganda. We had Zelensky over here at the Westminster Hall with a standing ovation and while he was over looking for planes. And he's not getting those planes either. No one wants to give him the planes. And then you've got, they're not talking about it in mainstream media a lot, but if you dig a little deeper, you'll see that there are pushback and there are questions being asked and a lot of anger in certain political circles, I believe more from the left in Germany, because Olaf Scholz has to addressed this with the German people. How can, you know, I remember saying, you know, at the beginning of this, that just based on the fact that Germany has been told to shoot itself in the foot, generally with this hostility towards Russia. It's deindustrializing Russia. It's causing a lot of anguish and misery in Germany because of the, you know, spike in oil prices because they're not getting the cheap oil and natural gas anymore. But now he's got to address this at some point. This whole Nord Stream pipeline thing is bound to blow up, sorry, pardon the pun, it's bound to blow up in Germany properly, because Olaf Scholz has to explain to the German people how he can possibly describe the United States as an ally. And by the way, if you attack one, Article 5 says, of the United Nations, you attack all. Based on that, the rest of the NATO countries should be getting together and declaring war on the United States, because that is an act of war, not just an act of international vandalism against Russian property, but it's also an attack on Germany. So I'm really curious to see how that pans out, because that is, you know, it's going to be a severe difficulty, I think, in this whole thing. It's an embarrassment, and it's going to be interesting to see how Scholz deals with this. Are you there, Patrick?
Mute. So German politics is not my area of expertise. It is interesting. Olaf Scholz, obviously very weak leader. He's been kind of led around by the nose by the Green Party, of all parties, by Annalena, girls jumping on trampolines, Bauerbach. You know, that's what she used to do before she was a politician.
Yeah.
She jumped on trampolines.
I wish you'd have stuck with the trampolines, to be honest.
Yeah. She's kind of cute. It would be fun. Anyway, so what about the German people? I mean, Germany's being deindustrialized.
Yeah.
What's the response of the German people to their government and this Green Party in particular? They've been so instrumental. They've played such a leading role in this insane war that is absolutely backfiring. The sanctions are completely backfiring. The Germans are going to be paying the price for decades to come. At one point, do the Germans just, I mean, have the Germans ever in their history ever stood up for them? Well, maybe they did, but not recently.
Yeah, well, it all went wrong, didn't it? With the last time they attempted to stand up for themselves against Jewish power, that went badly wrong. And of course, they've been, Putin said this recently, that Germany is still under the occupation of the United States since the Second World War. And I can't argue with that. And they also suffer from this, you know, national guilt and shame, because of World War II and everything that, maybe happened there. And, you know, so, but eventually they're going to have to put enough distance from that whole time and realize that they're being destroyed, and that if they want to survive, they've got to stand up. And I'm sorry, but they've got to sever ties with the United States. They've got to identify the United States as a criminal syndicate. And historically, Germany and Russia have had good relations. In fact, the 20th century is so aberrant geopolitically. And when you look at the relationship between Germany and Russia, say, for the last three or four centuries, and even Britain before the 20th century, relations were relatively good. Okay, you know, France was the problem with Napoleon, etc., and all that. But you have to then look, what happened in the 20th century that caused all this animosity between Germany and Russia? There's something strange happened, Patrick. What do you think that might be?
Indeed. I mean, well, there you go back to the First World War and the Jewish role. And the funny thing is, in the United States, if you look at the New York Times, but other Jewish publications, the beginning of the war, they were pro-German. They were pro-German because they were anti-Russian because of the Tsar. Well, the Tsar got overthrown, and then all of a sudden they switched sides. And, you know, there's the role of Baron von Rothschild or whatever. You got that role. But regarding Germany, and you said they got to break ties with the United States. A lot of countries really have to reexamine their ties with the United States. And I think of Japan, and the Japanese, honestly, the Japanese relationship with the United States from a Japanese point of view wasn't that bad over the post-World War II years. I mean, you could say, well, they were occupied. Well, yeah, they were effectively occupied, but the American market was thrown open to Japanese products. The Japanese were allowed to maintain their protectionist economic policies. Japan became very wealthy. It, it just kind of, what do you say? It gave the United States a proxy in terms of foreign policy, but the Japanese were able to do what they wanted to do. They, until recently, weren't having any real immigration. That's starting now, but still kind of a trickle. But what the Japanese got to realize, and right now in Japan, there's a lot of hostility towards China, and it's really misplaced. But what the Japanese and a lot of other countries have to look at is the United States. It's like it's a zombie country. I mean, this is a country that's completely falling apart.
So are we.
Yeah, you too. Europe too. And we're countries that are completely falling apart. And for a country like Japan, do you want to be handcuffed to a country that is dying, that's going to be a corpse lying on the ground, or a country that's going completely insane and running amok? Do you want to be handcuffed to that?
Yeah,
for these
quite.
Countries like Germany and Japan, all these countries, they need to divorce themselves from the United States. They can't keep following this. Otherwise, I mean, if you're handcuffed to a country that is running off to hell in a handbasket, where are you going?
Well, this country and the United States and all the European countries need to get back to that radical notion of looking after its own interests. That's what used to happen before we got into this, these sort of suicidal tendencies because of, ideology above all else rather than national interests. On a more positive note, as you know, I've been spending some time in Italy and I found it quite positive and fun. European conservatives face internal revolt, which is pathetic, over Berlusconi's anti-Zelensky comments. Several national delegations threatened to boycott a gathering in Naples of the Italian attends because Berlusconi, he basically went out there and said some bad things about Zelensky. He said the war wouldn't have happened if only Zelensky hadn't have invaded and attacked the two autonomous republics of the Donbass. Berlusconi said that he judged very, very negatively the behavior of this gentleman. And, of course, there was a whole sorts of hysteria where anger boiled over during a gathering of national EPP delegations in Strasbourg with representatives from Poland, Estonia, Lithuania, Ireland, the Czech Republic, Portugal, Sweden, Luxembourg, and Belgium, all standing up to criticize Berlusconi's comments and urging the EPP chief, Manfred Weber, to speak out publicly against him, the people with direct knowledge said. Putin uses not only the Eastern Front, he uses all means to activate all the proxies he can on the Western Front. Rasa, something I can't pronounce, said, a lawmaker from Lithuania was quoted as a woman, of course, as having said, many delegations will not go to Naples if Berlusconi is there. Just stay at home then, you know what I mean? This whole Donbass, the attacks in the Donbass region since 2014, apparently it didn't happen, Patrick, it just didn't happen. It's Russian propaganda. Berlusconi is just a mouthpiece for the Kremlin. This is basically the answer you get from everything. The whole premise in Western media circles, even by people well-meaning, is that Putin is evil. The propaganda, all they ever do is lie. They never actually tell you exactly how he lies. And they ignore the complete, constant lies from Zelensky. Demonstrably the case that he's been lying time and time and time again, including trying to drag us into a world war by trying desperately to trigger Article 50 and clutching at straws anytime he gets a chance. But yeah, Berlusconi came out and spoke the truth. I guess at 86 he doesn't really care anymore. So anyway, respect to him.
Good for Silvio. But I have the feeling we're probably out of time.
Yes, we are. So Thank you very much for joining me, Patrick. And hopefully we'll do a show. We can maybe do something from Italy in the week. I will be going over there again tomorrow. And we can catch up again soon. And thank you for joining me.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, folks. Be back again next week. Thank you for joining us. Do support Republic Broadcasting Network. We rely on it. This is one of the few networks where you'll get all the truth, not just about the evils of China and the World Economic Forum and all the rest of it. We actually talk about some other people who've maybe involved in some nefarious activities which are attempting to destroy Western civilization. So we talk about everything, so please spread the word of Republic Broadcasting Network. This is Last Man Standing, and I'll be back again next week. Until then, God bless you.